Right. Welcome back, everybody. You okay? I trust you're all enjoying the conference as much as we are. We're very pleased. And it's interesting, some of the things we've talked about, you know. We used to think public health nurses were, now we'll think, you know, PHN public health nurse or post-herpetic neuralgia, right? I did know about opsonophagocytic antibodies, OPA. We'll hear more about those in the next while, you can be sure. The multi-taper time series, that was interesting. Heterosubtypic in... It was all very interesting, wasn't it? So now what we've got is all these great breakout sessions just happened, and Karen Pilak from BCCDC will be summarizing for us some of the pearls from the immunization of immunocompromised adults. We've got four of these reports coming back, and we'll be done around 4:25, 4:30.
Right. So the breakout session that I was facilitating, the presenter was Dr. Grant Stiver, and the topic was immunization of immunocompromised adults. So I guess generally some of the pearls, and they came from people in the audience, and then I noted some myself. But certainly it was recognized that it's a very complex topic, and that... there isn't also a lot of definitive research in the area. I think the decisions that are made, the recommendations that come from, say, CDC Atlanta or NACI, well, they're made on the best evidence that is available at the time. Often that evidence is very limited. So there was an expressed desire that there really needs to be more studies done with the immunocompromised population. Also, as a general overview, The various groups that Grant was talking about are currently not, some of them are not included in the BC immunization chapter. So I think it's really recognized the need that we need to build connections with other specialist organizations, say for the inflammatory bowel disease group. I think the connection could be made with the BC Society of Gastroenterologists. You know, some of the work had been done by Andrea Durbin, our past vaccine educator, where we are, and so we have made headway with developing the protocols and having public health deliver more of the immunizations to certain groups, to the bone marrow transplant recipients, multiple solid organ transplant recipients. But there are other groups that we need to work with. Those clients with rheumatology rheumatological diseases is another one. So. What Dr. Stiver did was to talk about specifics of immunization in a number of groups. HIV, the chronic renal and hepatic disease group, rheumatological diseases, inflammatory bowel disease, splenectomized clients, solid organ transplant, bone marrow transplant, and immunocompromised travelers. So some of the things that I took away... and they're specific to the groups, with the bone marrow transplant or the hematopoietic stem cell transplant group, what he was talking about, and this is not new information, certainly it's in our immunization chapter, we know that we delay up to 2 years post-transplant for allogenic recipients, and for autologous transplants delay for a year, but what he was saying was that they don't mount a good immune response even though it's their own stem cells. So I thought they would probably have a better response, but in fact they don't. With some of the anti-rejection drugs, some actually deplete the B cells, and as you know, the B cells produce antibodies, so that's why there are problems there. And the real importance of immunization with rheumatoid arthritis patients, because often if they're on monoclonal antibody therapy, their early symptoms may be masked. So particularly with pneumococcal disease, that's the importance of immunization is again stressed. I had an interesting... statistic was that the rates of invasive pneumococcal disease in solid organ transplant patients is more than 100 times higher than the general population. So again, what the message is, immunize, immunize. With the bone marrow transplant, they have usually developed combined T and B cell immunodeficiencies. So they lose the immune memory. They lose their antibodies. But the donor B cells may contribute to antibodies temporarily. But the donor T cells do not transfer immune memory very well. And you can correct me if I've got any of this wrong. Okay, please, please. I think one of the pearls that someone in the audience brought up was the importance of immunizing those around the immunocompromised person. So this is known as, you know, it's the ring protection. You, in order to protect the person that's got the immunocompromising condition, you need to immunize those around them and have that circle of protection. And this is particularly important with influenza vaccine in children. I know often health units struggle with getting immunization, getting kids immunized. But it's really important with influenza vaccine because kids shed the influenza virus. When they do have influenza, they shed it for about 10 days, you know, much longer than do adults, so it's important. Also, and it's not really where public health comes in, but there's more work that needs to be done around the recognition that we need to fully immunize or boost the donor before for bone marrow transplant, especially for the B cell function and antibodies against strep pneumonia. And what happens is that we see that there's a better immune response when this is done in the transplant recipients. Then Dr. Stiver was talking about ETEC patch. So that's enterotoxic E. coli, and it's demonstrating an 80% efficacy in field trials. And why it works so well is because the skin is rich with dendritic cells, and so they're stimulated, and with the result that there's a better, a more robust immune response because you get the greater macrophage uptake of the antigen. So, let's see. All live vaccines are not created equal. So, to elaborate on that, varicella is the most attenuated live virus vaccine. That's interesting. And I think that was it. Anyone who attended the session, anything else that you've just got to say? Yes.
Any questions?
No question?
I think that Grant made the very important point that everybody with 200 CD4 cells isn't the same, and that it matters whether they have come down from a high up to 200 or they've been really blasted already and are recovering to some extent and getting up to 200. And I think in general, none of the studies that I'm aware of really factor that in, and I think it's an important point. And certainly it was enlightening to me.
Thank you.